This is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Stay tuned for the Butte Report. Welcome to the Butte Report. It is Thursday, February 25th, 2021. The Butte Report is a weekly program reporting on and analyzing issues that affect our lives and our livelihood by focusing on local government, including the Board of Supervisors, the various municipalities, and even school districts and water districts within Butte County. I'm your host, Sue Hildebrand. The Butte Report is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by StormTech.net, a locally owned one-stop shop for storm and weather-related safety items for home and property. StormTech offers products for flood control and prevention, water absorption, landslide prevention, and building and worksite protection. Visit StormTech and be prepared for whatever Mother Nature has in store. Tonight we'll cover the Butte County Board of Supervisors and the Chico City Council with respect to the latest evictions of homeless encampments and a call for the investigation into the firing of the city attorney. Interviews include Shelley Boston, Director of the Butte County Employment and Social Services Department, Carl Ory, former mayor of Chico, and Holly Drubney, Mental Health Services Act Coordinator at the Department of Behavioral Health. The Board of Supervisors held their regular meeting on Tuesday with a packed agenda. The board unanimously passed a resolution establishing the deadline of April 1st for applications for the Alternative Debris Removal Program for the damage resulting from the North Complex fire. If a property owner has structural fire debris from a qualifying structure and has not submitted an approved right of entry form or an acceptable county alternative program application by the required deadline, the debris may be declared a nuisance and health hazard. If that happens, these properties may then be abated by the county and all costs of abatement will be charged to the property owner. Ultimately, the costs may be filed as a lien against the property. Again, the deadline to file is April 1st. In a 3-2 vote, the conservative majority approved a letter of support of Assembly Bill 36. Sponsored by Assemblyman James Gallagher, the bill would allow design build, or fast-track construction, of two pipelines from Paradise to Chico. The staff report for the agenda item states, quote, AB 36 would help the town of Paradise recover from the devastating impacts of the campfire by authorizing the use of the design build project delivery method for a water pipeline and a sewer treatment project, end quote. But after talking with people in each of these organizations, it remains unclear how building a water pipeline to export water out of Paradise would assist in the town's recovery. Both Supervisors Deborah Lucero and Tammy Ritter voted against authorizing the letter of support. Both supervisors stated that they are unwilling to support the building of a project when the information about the project itself had not been presented to the board. Lucero pointed out that the environmental impact report is not finished yet. Therefore, the projects listed in the bill may not even be viable. Ritter said that the board was told at the last meeting that they would have access to the studies, but to date, none of these studies have been presented. Turning to the issue of homelessness in Butte County, at the previous board meeting on February 9th, Supervisor Tammy Ritter discussed the need for county departments to highlight what the county does to address homelessness and to correct any misinformation about what the county has the authority to do. At the meeting on Tuesday, the Departments of Employment and Social Services and Behavioral Health discussed the various programs to showcase these services. Scott Canelli, Director of Behavioral Health, discussed various programs and commented that all behavioral health programs serve people who are homeless. Director of the Department of Employment and Social Services, Shelby Boston, discussed the programs that directly address the homeless crisis.
We are very fortunate within the Department of Employment and Social Services to now have grants and programming for every population that we serve. So whether it's an adult, an older adult, a child and family, or an individual who's disabled, we are able to serve them. We have our largest program is the CalWORKS Housing Support Program, and we've been operating this program for about 4 or 5 years. And it, like I said, the largest program in 19-20 fiscal year, we served over 701 households, and the Housing Support Program can do things like rental assistance, helping with deposits, moving costs. We can help with credit repair. That's an issue that a lot of renters have that makes it difficult to find suitable housing for their family. We also have the CalWORKS Homeless Assistance Program, smaller program, but still able to help CalWORKS eligible families. And we can provide up to 16 days in a transitional sheltering. So say a hotel, motel, we can help with first and last rent, security deposits. And that is a shorter term program though. And so it's smaller scale as far as how many individuals we've served. Then next, this is one of my favorite programs we do, is the Home Safe Adult Protective Services Program. We, again, were very fortunate to apply and be successfully awarded. And this is 19-20 fiscal year was our very first year of providing Home Safe. This program focuses on our elders in the community who are at imminent risk of homelessness or are already experiencing homelessness. And we can provide short-term financial assistance, taking measures to prevent eviction. We can do some heavy cleaning. Sometimes we find with this population some hoarding behavior that can cause them to be evicted by a landlord. So we can get in there and help them with remedying those issues. And then the final, you know, newest, biggest program that we're having to support right now is due to COVID, and that's the Project Room Key. And we have served to date almost 500 individuals who otherwise would be on the streets through Project Room Key. And we've successfully transitioned 200 of those individuals with the help of our community partners to either permanent, transitional, or temporary housing. And Project Room Key, we are working in close coordination with the Jesus Center, True North, and Orville Rescue Mission, so, and our local hoteliers. And they're housing individuals who are either COVID positive and homeless. They may have been exposed to COVID and were awaiting test results, so they require isolation or quarantine. Or some individuals who have underlying medical issues and are over the age of 65 or have significant underlying health issues like cancer, diabetes, and we're able to put them in to a hotel and ensure that they get case management and three meals a day, which is important. And I will say one of the most rewarding pieces of Project Room Key is seeing some of our community members who are terribly ill with underlying health issues that have been neglected because of circumstances. And once they get stabilized and they have a warm bed to sleep in and nutritious food being delivered to them, we're seeing true benefits of that. And mental health issues stabilize and people are able to really get the next step forward in their life. And that's been a really rewarding aspect of operating Project Room Key.
Shelby Boston, the reason that this item was brought up this week at the Board of Supervisors is because a couple of weeks ago, Supervisor Tammy Ritter felt that there are many misconceptions by the public and even other local government agencies of what the county is doing to address homelessness. So what are some of the top misconceptions that you want to clear up right now?
Well, I think the biggest misconception is that the county can step into a local jurisdiction and set up shop with opening up a similar program to like what Yuba County has. They have a 14 Forward program. And there's an expectation that the county can do the same. And unfortunately, we're different than Yuba County in regards to the fact the county doesn't have a lot of property that it owns that we could go and step in and set up a homeless program and set up a similar program to 14 Forward. We only can go in to county-owned property. So the county can't go into the city of Chico, downtown city of Chico, and set up shop and provide services there without a coordinated effort and discussion with city of Chico or city of Oroville or town of Paradise. Doesn't matter which jurisdiction, we have to stay in our lane.
That was Shelby Boston, director at the County Department of Employment and Social Services. You are listening to the Butte Report on KZFR 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Chico. Turning to Chico, on Monday, another round of 72-hour notices was issued to evict unhoused people from encampments from the north side of Lower Bidwell Park along Vallambrosa from Highway 99 to Madrone. This marks the fourth time that the city of Chico has broken up homeless encampments in the last 2 months, while the number of homeless individuals still far exceeds the number of homeless shelter beds available. Many people have been evicted from multiple encampments. According to a statement by Chico City Council member Sean Morgan, the strategy of the Chico police is to move unsheltered people repeatedly until they leave town. Turning to the recent firing of the Chico City Attorney Andrew Jared, at a press conference on Wednesday, former Chico Mayor Carl Ori called for an investigation into the process of the firing, which happened during a closed council session on February 2nd, with no advance notice even given to council members. Ori is also calling on an ethics investigation into the past actions of Vince Ewing, the attorney that was hired to replace Andrew Jared. Ewing was the city attorney before Jared and was the city attorney when the city sued the citizen organization Move the Junkyard. A bit of background. In 2014, the grace period that allowed Chico Scrap Metal to remain at its current location on 20th Street expired, making the business activities in violation of the Chapmantown neighborhood plan. The conservative council at the time, which included the current mayor, Andrew Coolidge, and council member Sean Morgan, passed an ordinance that changed the land use plans, essentially making the business compliant. Over the next 30 days, a signature gathering effort produced over 9,000 signatures, far surpassing the 5,000 signatures needed to either repeal the ordinance or force the city to put the question to voters. Instead of doing either, on the advice of the city attorney at the time, Vince Ewing, the city sued the citizen organization Move the Junkyard. Ewing also advised the city that Chico Scrap Metal would pay the court fees. When the city lost that lawsuit, the original ordinance became null and void, which relieved Chico Scrap Metal from owing legal fees and costing the city of Chico $200,000. I spoke with former Mayor Carl Ori and asked him why he believes an investigation into the firing of Andrew Jared and the rehiring of Vince Ewing is needed.
This whole hiring of a new city attorney late at night in a closed session just stinks. There's several things that Mr. Ewing should be looked, his practices should be looked into. Some of his practices that he should be looked into was when he was city attorney, and that he told the city council that they should sue the referendum against allowing Chico Scrap Metal to stay and promised them that Chico Scrap Metal would pay foot the bill. And that was not true. And it turned out that Chico Scrap Metal, when they lost the case, said, you know, sorry. And so the city swallowed $200,000 of an unsuccessful effort to fight a successful 9,200 signature referendum. So that's one thing he should be looked into for. I've never talked about this before either, but when I was first elected and I had just led the referendum, I called the city attorney, Mr. Ewing, and I said, you know, I don't think I have a conflict of interest. I don't get paid for this, but what's your opinion? What's the law? And he sent me a questionnaire and asked me a whole bunch of questions. He called me a couple times asking me questions about my involvement with the referendum. He was preparing to sue me. And I think that's unethical for a city attorney to interview a city council member in preparation to sue him. You know, it's highly improper to be suing a city council member for leading a referendum anyway. But for an attorney to fraudulently get information out of you in preparation for a lawsuit, that's unforgivable. That really is something that the bar should be looking at. And I guess the final thing, and I don't know if it gets to the point of censure or what, but he disappeared for well over a year. He just stopped coming to the council meetings. I asked about it. I was concerned. I said, how's Vince? You know, and Jared, the deputy city attorney, just shrugged his shoulders. And they got away with this for well over a year where there was no explanation. Why would you rehire somebody who treats you that way?
Former Mayor Carl Ori, you were personally sued along with the community organization Move the Junkyard, and leading that lawsuit was Vince Ewing, which, as you've mentioned, lost that case, costing the city $200,000. Talk about why you're concerned about Vince Ewing coming back at this time when that case has already been decided.
The decision that he lost was fighting the referendum. What Chico Scrap Metal has done since then is they have sued the city, suggesting that eminent domain, that city took away their property rights. That case is going through the courts, and Mr. Ewing would end up inheriting that case. So I have concerns that he would not be able to be impartial. You know, at the same time that he would be representing the city, he would be facing allegations of, you know, his firm that they should pony up the $200,000 that they cost the city. I mean, it gets even crazier. In the suit, when they were arm in arm with Chico Scrap Metal, they said that Chico Scrap Metal, Mr. Ewing said in court documents that Chico Scrap Metal had legal rights against the city, that the Chico Scrap Metal, if they were to sue the city, would prevail. And now they're in court arguing the opposite side. I do think an allegation against Mr. Ewing should be filed with perhaps the grand jury, perhaps with the Bar Association. I don't have a lot of interest in getting back into some litigation with his law firm. But I do think that it shows that it's a poor choice. And I think that's the bigger issue here. If you're going to hire a city attorney, let's have an open process. Let's have a transparent process. Let's interview more than one or two firms and find out what their cost is. Let's even look at having a local attorney again. Let's not, in the dead of night, fire one attorney without reason. Hire the old crony that when he wrote the current cannabis ordinance, did away with deliveries and did away then with medical marijuana, that wrote Sit and Lie and criminalized homelessness and is quite willing to sit down with Morgan and Coolidge again and come up with new ways of criminalizing homelessness. This is just a really bad choice. I don't mind having a new city attorney, but why do it behind closed doors without any transparency?
Former Mayor Carl Ori, you have concerns about the choice of this new city attorney. First, the firing of the old city attorney and the hiring of this new/old city attorney. And you're concerned that it may be a violation of the Brown Act. Talk about that.
The first possible violation of the Brown Act was the agenda only called for an evaluation of city clerk, city manager, and city attorney. There was no authority for them to take the action of firing anyone. Second, there was no authorization in the agenda to hire a new city attorney. So I think right there are some concerns. I also just have to wonder how a majority of the council came to that agreement so quickly, unless perhaps more than three of them had discussed this in advance. We have made Public Record Act requests of all the council members, asking them for all communications they've had between each other and anyone else concerning the city attorney to see whether or not more than three council members outside of a notice public meeting had discussions of what their actions were going to be. So those are the things that we're concerned about that may go to the grand jury, may go to State Fair Political Practices Commission, because we need answers. We need transparency.
I know that you asked city staff who actually agendized this particular item on the closed session, and you did not get an answer. Is that unusual for an item to be agendized, but the city staff is not willing to share which one of the council members actually put it on the agenda?
I do believe the mayor has some inherent ability to put things on the agenda. And ironically, the person who has the easiest access to the agenda is the city attorney. Anytime he wants something discussed about pending litigation, it goes on the agenda. I can't imagine that Mr. Jared put this on the agenda. So yeah, it is unusual to me that no one's been identified as the instigator of placing this on the agenda.
That was Carl Ori, former mayor of the city of Chico. As it stands, the use of the parcel on 20th Street as a junkyard has been continuously illegal since January 1st, 2015. You are listening to the Butte Report on KZFR 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Chico. Finally, the Butte County Department of Behavioral Health is conducting its annual Mental Health Services Act community and stakeholder input process. The MHSA was created by voter-approved ballot proposition and funds mental health services for Californians, particularly in underserved communities. Behavioral Health is now seeking community participation to identify unmet mental health needs and potential barriers to treatment. Two virtual meetings have already taken place, and four more are scheduled over the next 2 weeks. Holly Drubney, Mental Health Services Act Coordinator, discussed why public input is being gathered.
Community collaboration is a guiding principle of the Mental Health Services Act. It was really, its foundation is, and the way it began is so grassroots. It was the stakeholders and Californians of Mental Health Services asking for an enhanced system of care. And they wanted that, what we call consumer mental health services, they wanted that consumer voice to be really prevalent in all of the programming that goes into MHSA. A stipulation of the MHSA is that you cannot supplant those funds. That $1 million tax cannot replace funding for other programming. It either had to be brand new programming or expanding programming. And so really getting that consumer voice that dictated the priorities of where this funding would go is probably the most important and unique thing about this act.
And what kind of information are you seeking from the public?
An example of information that we're looking for is to better understand the consumer experience, whether it's the actual consumer of mental health services or their family members. That way we can understand how to overcome barriers to treatment. We can understand to allocate those dollars to specific target populations. For example, in the last year's process, we found approximately 60% of survey respondents said that these funds should prioritize homelessness. And so that was a really great indicator for us on if there is a increase in allocation for MHSA, where would we allocate that to? We already have that understanding of what our community finds to be a priority. And then just to follow up a little bit on when I'm talking about allocations, the annual allocation fluctuates each year depending on, you know, revenue, how the economy is doing. So it is a volatile funding stream in that way. So having this baseline information of what our community finds to be priorities really helps with planning for such a volatile funding stream.
So you've already had two of these public meetings. You have four more scheduled in the next couple of weeks. And so once you gather that information, how are you going to use that information? What is the process for turning that into public policy?
Yeah, that's a great question. We utilize a survey to collect the information, and that really helps us organize the information into a report that our behavioral health leadership accesses. We also have a Mental Health Services Act Steering Committee that really looks closely at that report. If surveys are not people's thing, which we totally understand, sometimes we feel burned out by surveys, that's what really where you can come to that community meeting and verbally express your priorities or interests, and we'll include that in the report as well.
And finally, who should participate in these public input meetings, and how can they participate?
We really urge the entire community to participate. The more I think our community understands the public mental health service system, it will benefit our community at large. Anybody who's experiencing a mental illness or a family member of someone who's experiencing a mental illness, just getting more educated on the resources available and how we're funded, I think is crucial to understanding the entire mental health public health system. Individuals can participate by going to our website, buttecounty.net/behavioral health, and they can find all the information they need to access the meetings there. It is a virtual environment, which is different, as we know, due to the pandemic. So what we've done is actually recorded a introduction video that if individuals are not able to join a meeting, they can still watch the video and feel that they've been informed, so that they get educated, and then they could take the survey following that. And that's all located on our website.
That was Holly Drubney, Mental Health Services Act Coordinator with Butte County Behavioral Health. The last four meetings are scheduled for March 5th, March 9th, March 10th, and March 11th. You are listening to the Butte Report on KZFR 90.1 FM in Chico. Updates from our elected officials with COVID and potential exposure to COVID. Oroville Mayor Chuck Reynolds is out of quarantine. Assemblyman Gallagher was cleared by the Capitol nurse, according to one of his staffers. Neither State Senator Jim Nielsen nor Congressman Doug LaMalfa's office responded to multiple requests for comment regarding the two men's potential exposure resulting from their lunch with Mayor Reynolds. There is still no indication which Chico City Council members were exposed to the coronavirus, which ultimately resulted in the cancellation of the last meeting. Looking to next week, there will be a joint meeting between the Town of Paradise and the Paradise Irrigation District on Monday, March 1st, starting at 10 a.m. The Gridley City Council also meets on Monday, starting at 6 p.m. On Tuesday, the Oroville City Council meets at 4:30 and the Chico City Council meets at 6 p.m. On Wednesday, the Water Commission will meet at 1:30, and on Thursday, LAFCO meets at 9 a.m. The Butte Report is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Trace Ombres, celebrating over 30 years in downtown Chico. Trace Ombres has reopened with Latin dishes made fresh from scratch, award-winning margaritas, and patio seating, serving lunch and dinner Wednesday through Sunday from noon until 8 p.m. and until 10 p.m. on Friday and Saturday. To-go orders and curbside pickup also available. Visit their Facebook page for details and updates, and a big thank you for your continued support. Music by bensounds.com. Remember that the most important aspect of democracy is an informed citizenry. Tune in again next week and stay informed about what your government is doing. And if you have a tip, send an email to sue@kzfr.org. Stay tuned for Chico News and Review on the Radio with Jason Cassidy.